Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we will turn our attention to Puerto Rico, where natural disasters and misfortune continue to pile on a wounded island still recovering from the devastating Hurricane Maria. In just these few weeks of 2020 so far, more than 1,000 earthquakes or their aftershocks have struck the island. This includes the island's most violent quake in a century. On Thursday, President Trump declared several towns major disaster areas after releasing more than $8 billion in approved disaster aid that the administration was withholding. Now, listeners, we have a guest in Puerto Rico who's going to join us in a second. But if you have relatives or other connections to the United States Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, we are opening up the phones for you to report back and tell everyone else what you are hearing and learning about the impact of the quakes and shocks and the toll they are taking on people, and say what you think needs to be done. 212-433-WNYC. If you have anything to report, first or secondhand, from Puerto Rico, 212-433-9692. And maybe even in the bigger picture, what can you tell us about the hurricane recovery efforts this far away from Hurricane Maria? Joining us now from Puerto Rico is Yarimar Bonilla. She is a political anthropologist and professor in the Department of Africana, Puerto Rican, and Latino Studies at Hunter College. She is co-editor of the book, Aftershocks of Disaster, Puerto Rico Before and After the Storm. Hi, Professor Bonilla. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thank you, Brian. Happy to be here, sort of, virtually.
Yeah, right. Sort of under the circumstances, right? And it's kind of eerie to read the title of your book, which had to do with life before and after the hurricane, but the word aftershocks, now they're having earthquakes and actual aftershocks.
I know, it's been very eerie to have published a book about that and to see it unfolding now. But I think, you know, it shows the relationship between these different forms of disaster and the similarities and how they're experienced.
Where are you today, Professor?
I am in Caguas today at a mutual aid center where I'm doing some interviews about how folks are, you know, putting into practice the lessons learned after Maria to now deal with this current situation.
Want to share an example of that?
Well, part of what I've been seeing is how all the mutual aid support that emerged after Maria, when the government was absent, when the federal aid dragged its feet, people put into practice, you know, their own networks of solidarity. And this time they haven't waited for the government. Where in after Maria, weeks went by and people were looking around, assuming that there would be a kind of official organized governmental response. Here, immediately after the earthquakes, people mobilized because they knew that the government would not come out, and they anticipated what we now know, which is that, you know, it takes over a week for the federal government to even recognize the magnitude of this disaster and to issue the kind of emergency declaration that is necessary to even begin moving people out of the epicenter area.
Though they have now done it and have started to release billions of dollars in aid that was being previously withheld, that you had called on them to release?
Yes, although the release comes with incredible strings attached. So rather, you know, 2.5 years after Maria, they are just now starting to release the funds, and they're also putting into place specific measures that do not apply to the rest of the United States. So for one, all the reconstruction efforts have to be monitored by the Fiscal Control Board, which already a lot of folks here felt operated as a colonial entity that robbed Puerto Ricans of self-government. And so now that agency is going to have to supervise everything that is happening here. They've marked the funds so that they're not geared, you know, steered towards the reparation of the electric grid, because the federal government has this idea that Puerto Ricans are extraordinarily corrupt and that they've been mismanaging the funds of recovery. But the fact is that the only people that have been indicted for mismanagement after Maria are folks from FEMA. The sub-director of FEMA in Puerto Rico was arrested for scandals related to mismanagement of funds. No local officials have been found of doing any kind of mismanagement. So there's a kind of interesting dog whistling that is happening of signaling that Puerto Ricans are unable to take care of themselves, unable to handle their own funds, when in fact it is federal agencies that have been mishandling the recovery.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, our guest live from Puerto Rico is Yarimar Bonilla, political anthropologist, professor in the Department of Africana, Puerto Rican, and Latino Studies at Hunter College, author of Aftershocks of Disaster, Puerto Rico Before and After the Storm, as we talk about the actual aftershocks of the recent earthquake and the relief efforts now underway. And we are inviting your reports, firsthand or secondhand, if you're hearing anything from people you know in Puerto Rico, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And it looks like we're getting at least one call from the island right now, so let's take that one first. Brian, you're on WNYC. Hi there. Do I have your name right? Is your name Brian, like my name? All right, we will try to come back to that line. Let's try Alicia in Queens, who I think has a question. Alicia, you're on WNYC.
Good morning. I heard a disturbing report today that someone was saying that it's possible that U.S. interests are doing fracking in Puerto Rico. And I just wanted to know if that's the case, and could that be the cause of some of these earthquakes? Because we see what happened to Oklahoma when they started fracking, that they now suffer with earthquakes all the time.
And Professor Bonilla, I will say we have two callers on the board, Alicia and one other, asking this fracking question. Is this a topic of conversation on the island?
Huge topic of conversation, yes. There's been a lot of viral videos circulating on social media, etc., and a big concern about this. So far, there has been, you know, all that has been consistently denied by the government and by experts in these matters. They keep denying this, but the rumor keeps coming back. And as an anthropologist, I'm interested in what it lies behind the fears and the rumors. And, you know, the fact is that Puerto Rico has always been a site of experimentation for warfare, for medical experimentation. So it makes sense that people are afraid that there's been some kind of mishandling of the natural resources that is causing this. I think it's not an unfounded fear, but so far it's been repeatedly denied by the authorities.
Bernard in Rockland County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bernard. Is it Bernard in Rockland County there on line one?
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Quick question. I feel that we're being cheated over here. The money that's being released now was for Maria, and they're releasing it only for a few provinces now that were hit by the earthquake. So do we get a second round of federal funding for this second emergency, or are we just getting two for one here?
Great question. Professor Bonilla?
Yeah, there are multiple things happening. So on right now, the funds that I talked about having strings attached, those were related to Maria that happened 2.5 years ago. And so those are for these long-term infrastructural projects and rebuilding. At the same time, the government also dragged its feet on the declaration of a disaster area immediately after the earthquake. Normally, usually, within the 50 states, that is done immediately, because when a governor requests those disaster funds to be released, that's usually done in conversation with FEMA officials. And, usually the president signs that within 24 hours. In this case, it was an inexplicable 6 days that took for those immediate emergency funds to be released. Those are not for long-term repair. It remains to be seen what will be released for the long-term repair of these communities. What was done for these earthquake communities is just that immediate funds to relocate people, to help them, stay somewhere else until the earthquake ceases. Just very temporary measures. We still don't know what kind of funds are going to be released for reconstruction in the long term related to the earthquakes? And I mean, and what can we expect when 2.5 years later we're still trying to figure out what the plan is for the hurricanes?
How bad, if you can say briefly, was this earthquake? We're also observing this week, as I'm sure you know, the 10th anniversary of the Haiti earthquake, which devastated that country. How bad was it in Puerto Rico?
So what's important to keep in mind is that it wasn't an earthquake, but that it's an specialists call an earthquake swarm. So it's not about one strong quake and then smaller aftershocks, as is usually the case, but rather about a series of constant earthquakes. In the southern coast of Puerto Rico, there are several earthquakes happening every day for over a week. Some of these are of small magnitude, 2 point something, 3 point something, but there've also been 4 point and 5 point above, right? Mm-hmm. And so the problem is that you have these structures that are being debilitated over and over again, and you also have an incredible mental health crisis because there's no sense of when this will end, and also no sense of if a stronger one is going to come, because these are not regular aftershocks. These might be foreshocks of a stronger one that might happen at any moment. So I think that that's part of what's particular about this this emergency is the uncertainty. And so whereas with the hurricane, you know, the hurricane passed and we knew that it wasn't going to double back and hit us the second time, here we don't know. And this is having an incredible impact on the area's economy, where businesses have been closed for over a week now, on people's mental health, on their inability to recover, to move forward. And this is why they're sleeping outside. And I've visited these kind of makeshift tent cities and encampments that have emerged, where you have elderly populations, you have little kids, you have babies sleeping outside unprepared, because it's not like they decided to go on a camping trip and brought all their supplies. You know, they suddenly had to flee their homes. They're sleeping in their cars. They don't have the proper facilities. And that's what makes it so cruel that they would take 6 days to even release the funds for just some basic temporary measures to make sure that these folks are safe as they wait out the end of the earthquake swarm.
Wilfredo in Puerto Rico, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York, Wilfredo. Hi.
How you doing, Brian? I'm in New York, Brian. Nice to see you. Welcome back, Brian.
Thank you very much. Oh, you're in New York?
Yeah. I'm from that town, from Guanica. I'm from Guanica. My family for more than 50 years from Guanica. It's so sad to see un pueblo destroyed like that. And then the other girl was talking about that tracking. My father was watching TV. The first day, the first one came, he told me when he was watching TV, he heard like something explode. And since that day, everything started. All these years, we've never seen the boats out there tracking or it's like kind of weird. After these people started tracking, all these shakes started happening. So something got to be wrong.
Well, Fredo, thank you very much. Any thought on anything that he said, including the area, Guanica, Puerto Rico, that his family is from?
Well, Guanica is the epicenter, and it's been just, you know, hit so hard. You know, I don't want to say destroyed, because clearly there are still families living there, etc., but it's devastating damage. And he talks about this noise, and that's part of what people are reporting, is a very intense sound. Because they're at the epicenter, they say, you know, it just sounds like this rumbling coming from beneath the earth. And this is happening several times a day, where they hear this sound and this rumbling coming through like a train underneath their feet. And again, a lot of people are attributing it, you know, and are asking questions if there was some kind of man-made situation that caused this. But, you know, this area is known to be on significant fault lines. It is in a place where the tectonic plates, you know, meet. And so it is not a surprise that this is a place of heightened seismic activity. It's not inexplicable, even though there is a lot of concern.
And where, just for people who aren't familiar with that area that you describe as the epicenter and that the caller's family is from, Guanica, where on the island is that?
It's on the southern coast, and that's, you know, a southwest coast. that has been the center of these earthquakes. And you know, this is an area that has also been very much a victim of the economic crisis. It's an economically depressed area. It's among the, you know, in terms of medium family income, it's among the lowest in Puerto Rico, which makes it among the lowest in all of the United States. So it's an area that's not prepared to deal with this kind of historic disaster.
Adam in Monmouth County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Adam. I see you just came back from Puerto Rico.
I just came back from Rincon, where I usually spend the winters. My family is from there. My father was born there. I think what people have to understand about Puerto Rico and the mentality is that they are still deeply, deeply traumatized by Maria, by the aftermath of Maria. And if I talk to any of my friends or relatives, I kind of get the same reaction I got when talking to my father about Vietnam. They don't want to talk about it. They're still trying to process it. And then you get the earthquake, and they're dealing with a political system, the local political system, and I don't mean to call the political system there corrupt, because there's a lot of corruption everywhere, but it is very bureaucratic. It is very localized, and they don't know what the reaction is going to be, what the help that's going to be afforded to them is. They don't even have an emergency broadcast system, at least that I could find on the radio there. They have trucks that come through and announce the local parties that the mayors are throwing in the town, but those trucks don't come through and announce when the water or electric shortages are going to happen. And I think that in the midst of their trauma, they're questioning, are they really part of the United States? Do they get the same reaction and care that other
Americans do? And Adam, I'm going to jump in just because we're coming to the end of the show, and I want to give our guest a chance to react to that. And he's really echoing some of what you wrote in your Washington Post op-ed this week that was headlined, "How Much More Do We Puerto Ricans Have to Do for Ourselves?" Right?
Yes, I think he's correct that is the feeling here. There's, you know, we were, you know, 2.5 years later, we still haven't gotten help from the federal government. The local government has also failed us terribly, and that's part of why there was a big uprising this summer to get the governor to resign. And that's why folks in Puerto Rico are not waiting for government assistance. They've been helping themselves. They've created their own tent cities. People in this case, the whole island hasn't been devastated. It's mostly the southern coast. So people from the north have been flocking to the south to help their neighbors and help, you know, their fellow Puerto Ricans, because we do have a sense that we are treated differently than the rest of the United States, not just at the time of disasters, but whole year round.
Hunter College professor Yarima Barnia joining us live from Puerto Rico. Thank you so much, and good luck down there.
Thank you.